There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
Andy, welcome to the studio. Mr. Andy Thompson, where did you drive from today? I forgot to ask.
I drove from Minneapolis.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So you're 20 minutes or so.
Not too far at all.
Nothing.
Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience? I know I found you through, I got my putter fit with you. And then I took one of your aim point classes, which we'll talk about today. But I think just for context for the audience, it would be good just to give a little background about yourself and how you got into kind of putting coaching and instructing, and we'll go from there.
Sure. It's kind of a long, winding journey.
That's fine. We got all the time in the world, man. We got hours if you want.
I actually didn't start out in the golf industry till very late. So I was in operations management at a printing company for 28 years and got real corporate and decided I wanted to do something different. So I opened up my own golf improvement company called Totally Driven. And that was located out in Edina, originally out in Oakdale, Minnesota.
Yeah, I've heard of it, or I've heard of the locations.
Yeah, so we did all kinds of golf improvements, lessons, golf fitness, club fitting. And we were a little ahead of our time. At the time, you could only fit into components. So we were fitting like Mura and stuff like that. And then we started getting companies gradually, Srixon and McGregor. And pretty soon we were fitting all the major brands. And I sold that business in 2015. And in the interim, I had just kind of become a club fitter, started learning it and getting better and better at it. And we started getting a following primarily for our club fitting. And I worked with David Adele. David Adele was kind of a putting guru, really. I mean, he had a putter fitting system that was very unique based on how you aim your putter. And you went through putter fitting with me, so you probably saw a glimpse of some of that. But he also had a system where he could fit people in different line combinations, head combinations, hosel styles. And that helped people aim their putter better. So that was the start of a putter fitting. And then you kind of fit from there, you know, with length, loft, lie, and all of that stuff. So I learned a lot from David. And through David, I met David Orr, who's one of the top putting instructors in the country here. Met Mark Sweeney from Aimpoint and a number of top putting gurus around the U.S. So I kind of lucked into meeting those folks and learning more about putting. And as I started doing more fittings and doing things in golf, I understood that, you know, this was kind of a calling for me. You know, I really love the putter, putting aspect, putter fitting, teaching people putting. And I just started gravitating into it and learned from some of these top folks in the country. Became an aim point instructor in about 2009, 2010, one of the first ones. So that was really eye-opening for me, new experience. Started doing that as well as fitting, so I was pretty busy. But eventually I decided I was going to sell the business, didn't want to have the risk anymore, and sold the business to my partners and stepped out. I thought I could really make a go of it as a putting instructor, and I tried that for a few years and just wasn't enough business, just not enough interest from people to really work on their putting. I primarily get top high school, college golfers and good players around the state here. But other than that, the average golfer doesn't really pay that much attention to their putting. So, you know, I went back into a job for a while, worked at the government center for a while, and then retired from there about a year and a half ago and started getting into putting a little bit more. not doing it full time, but I also work at Second Swing. As you mentioned, I'm a putter fitter there. I also do some full swing stuff, but you'll see me down there 2 days a week, putter fitting. So that's kind of my main focus there. So, between Aimpoint, working at Second Swing and my instruction, I keep pretty busy. So it's just about right for me right now.
Yeah.
Just love working with people.
Yeah, I love it. Before we even get into just putter fitting and aiming and Aimpoint specific stuff, I am kind of curious, talking to people that have been in the industry a lot longer than myself, or probably most people that caught the golf bug, call it in the last, maybe decade, or even, 5 years as the sport has really grown since, call it COVID 2020. I'm a big advocate for fitting clubs, in the first place. Putter's obviously a big one, but I just kind of want your take on, if you started in fitting, like, how big of a piece is it for amateur golfers? Like, I always try and harp on the fact that everybody needs to get fit, and you're costing yourself strokes and probably a lot of unneeded frustration if you don't in the first place. What are maybe some of the components when you do fit people? Like, what are people not understanding about the fitting process? And I feel like it's a lot more popular now. People aren't just walking into Dick's Sporting Goods or wherever and getting stuff off the rack. But, why is it so important and optimal? And we'll talk about the putter, in a little bit. But sure. For everything else, like, maybe help the audience kind of understand why it's so crucial.
It's a crazy sport, It's, if you're going to go skiing, I guess you just get a set of skis and you go, and you get a tennis racket and you play tennis. But the reality is golf is a very intricate sport. It's a very challenging sport. And we're not all built the same. We've got, people that are taller, people that are shorter. They hold the club differently. Their hands are higher, they're lower. What people don't understand is club fitting is huge. We see customers all the time, and I've been doing club fitting for, 20 years now. And when I started, nobody got club fit hardly. Now, like you said, people are starting to understand it, but it's a funny sport in that the top players get it and they get fit. The average player that could really improve their game, they don't really pay any attention to it. I don't know why they don't gravitate towards it, because it would help them potentially reduce their handicap or
lower
scores.
I think it's because people always say, I'm not good enough to get fit, right? Like anything, like, oh, I want to practice more or play more and get my game in a good spot before I get fit. And I always tell my friends that are against, like, you're immediately going to play better if you are fit. And I always just like, the best example is, a 6'5" guy playing standard length clubs, it's not going to work, right? Like, right. And that starts to make sense, I think, in people's mind. But I think generally it's the barrier to entry of, like, I'm not good enough at the sport yet, so I'm just going to grab something, start to play, and then once my game is better, I feel like I'll get fit and it'll make more of an impact. And it's almost the opposite.
It's weird. Somebody like yourself, you could get club fit and you might reduce your scores by a half a stroke or something like that. I mean, you get a 18 handicap, if they really got fit properly, might drop their scores by 3, 4, 5 strokes, and they don't get it. So,
yeah.
It's weird, but it's the way it is.
Yeah.
It's probably never going to change.
Well, for the putter specifically, I should have asked this at the beginning. So when you said, I imagine did Adele start in putters only? Because I know they have irons now too, but were they primarily putters first?
He started in putters and then went to wedges. Then he designed a set of clubs for Bryson, which was he designed the first single length clubs that Bryson used when, I think Bryson might have been in college, and Mike Shy and David Adele were buddies kind of, and he was one of the guys that I learned a little bit too, is from Mike Shy, who was Bryson's coach for a long time. And so he kind of started segueing into some of the other segments.
Got it. So in talking about, I think you were the first, call it putter fitter that I saw that started with how you aim the putter. So, you know, I've done a lot of putter fittings over the years, and usually the first thing that we do is get on, you know, like you roll your previous putter, and then, you know, you get set up on a Quintec and kind of see like where your eyes are looking over the ball and stuff. But I had never done a putter fitting where like the first thing that we did was let's see how you're aiming your current putter and like aiming some of these other putters. And the interesting thing that I noticed is some of the best putters I've ever had, in my opinion, is trying to remember, is I can't remember the neck that I have. I don't even know where my putter is. But it's kind of it's almost like a double bend or like a single bend neck. I had a ping putter like that, and I've had some other Scotties like that, and I seem to aim them the best, and I don't know why. I would love for you to talk about, like, one, obviously it's super important to be able to aim the putter well before you can get fit, but two, like, why do different, call it hosels and top lines and stuff, matter for different players? Is it just kind of a, is it a feel and look thing, or how does it work, I guess, mentally? Because for me, like, I pick up a putter and I feel like I aim them all the same, and then, like, you would put the laser on there, and for whatever reason, like, the bent necks and double bends are the ones that I aim better than, like, a, you know, standard, I don't know, slant neck or maybe a plumber's neck or something like that. So I'm curious as to why. And maybe there's no good answer.
I don't know if there's a why. But what I found is, and David taught me this, but all the different elements of a putter affect how you aim. So some people will aim a putter that's got a different hosel better than another one. And some people will aim something that's got a lot of scoring lines better than something that doesn't. And when I say better, they might aim one putter right and the other one straight, or left and straight, or left and right. You know, it's crazy. So length is a factor. The type of head that you have is a factor. So, you know, I don't want to give it all away because I like to get people to come in and get the full experience. But the reality is most people would aim a blade putter left and a mallet putter right.
Interesting. Okay.
It's dangerous because it's 80-20. So, you know, I kind of see somebody and I see what they're playing, and I can make some assumptions as to what might help them or hurt them. And I start putting them in what I think will work, and it doesn't always go that way. So scoring lines are the same way. A lot of scoring lines, people will tend to aim that more left. No scoring lines or minimal scoring lines, they'll aim it more right. Hosel type, more offset to the hosel, people will tend to aim that more left. Less offset, they'll aim it more to the right. Now, again, those are all like 80-20, so I just have to watch and react to what I'm seeing. But I'm intuitive enough to kind of know where I want to go and what I want to try.
Yeah.
Because I've only got a certain amount of time. I don't have finite time that I can do a putter fitting with, and I want to get it done and have the person have a good experience and not be frustrated.
Yeah.
You know, the funniest thing is every single person that comes in and does a putter fitting and I put the laser on their putter, they're just totally baffled by that they weren't aiming their putter straight.
Yeah.
Everybody assumes that they aim their putter right at the target. You've seen the board that I use. It's, you know, it's about 2 feet wide. And from 15 feet away, people miss the board. I mean, they're not even close, you know, to, you know, they're 5-6 degrees off of what they think is straight.
I was blown away because, so I think I came in, I brought my lab putter, my DF3, and I think I aimed it, you know, solid. It was like inside right. And then I think we tried some of the Titleist, and I was aiming that one dead center. But I think we tried, like, I think I also had a lab blade, and I was, like, way out left.
Yeah, which is typical, but not always.
Yeah, but it was, like, way out left, which, you know, thinking back to my stroke and, like, the putts that I miss, I was either pulling things or I'd miss them way right. And you start to realize, like, yeah, if you're aiming left edge, now you're compensating somewhere in your stroke without even really knowing it. Right, like that's ultimately what happens. And I just couldn't believe, I sat there with 3-4 putters and I would, you know, aim them, and like two of them would be dead perfect and the other two wouldn't even touch the hole.
Right.
And I had never, I don't know why, I had never thought of that. And like when it came to putting, it was always look and feel for me and like how they rolled on the machine. And the first thing we did was like, well, how do you aim it from 15, 20 feet?
Right. You know, a lot of times I can actually tell from somebody's stroke. So I usually have somebody just putt their putter first. And without paying that much attention to where they're aiming it, I just look at their stroke. And a lot of times they're just leaving the face open or they're working really hard to get the face shut. And I've already, in my mind, kind of got an assumption as to where they aim it based on what they're doing with their putting stroke. So it's true. I mean, we're all going to compensate for what we do. It's just harder, you know.
Yeah.
There's tour pros that don't aim it perfectly out there.
Yeah, a lot of tour and they'll pros hook putts in. Yeah. Like Tiger always talks about how he likes to hook putts in the hole.
Yeah, Tiger, you know, when you hear him in an interview after he plays, he'll often reference, yeah, was releasing it really good today. Well, he aims right. If he doesn't release it, he's going to miss right. And when he's releasing it like he practices and gets used to, he makes putts. He does try to hook it in the hole. But he kind of needs to. He aims a little right, or he used to aim a little right at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, the big difference there is these guys are practicing putting a couple hours a day or an hour a day. You know, we don't dedicate that kind of time.
And well, especially in Minnesota, like it's always my chipping and my putting are the first two things that when I start to play outdoors are the most difficult, right? Like it's like speed control is obviously a big thing with putting, which we'll talk about. But like with chipping too, like you just kind of lose the feel around the greens and, you know, your short chips, you'd hit, you know, 15 feet by, and, you know, whatever it is, like it's always hard when you come out of the winter. And so before we talk about aim point, I do want to ask, like, so for anybody listening that's, you know, it's probably getting ready for the season, right? Like, you know, it's snowing out right now.
Yeah, snowing.
We thought that it was going to be maybe a little earlier. This might set us back another week or two, but, you know, we're talking, like, again, first part of April right now. I think people are probably going to start to, you know, maybe change or tweak some stuff in their bags. For somebody that's, you know, getting a putter fitting, whether they come to you at Second Swing or, you know, whatever else they do, in your opinion, like what are the main components of like what makes a good putter fit for somebody? So like obviously we've talked about how well you aim it, but you know the other components of putting are, you know, like your stroke and how well you take it back and through, and then obviously speed is a massive component as well. And we all know there's different like faces on different putters for, you know, maybe softer off the face. Like what do you suggest for people for what they need to figure out, because this is all leading up to, you know, when we talk about aim point, like you have to aim thing, like the three things with putting, I think, are aim, speed, and then there's probably one I'm missing,
the green.
And reading the green, right?
Yeah, that's the three elements.
Yeah, so if those are the three elements, like what are the things people need to do when they're getting fit for a putter or they're trying to figure it out on their own that's going to be important for making it work?
Well, you know, when I'm doing a putter fitting, I'm trying to just fit them in a putter, but I'm also, I want to fit them in a length that's appropriate. So that's where people need to start, is length. And people get that wrong so often, it's surprising to me. I mean, you'll get a person come in that's 5'7" and they're playing a 35-inch putter. They may or may not be gripping down on it. They're not gripping down on it. They're standing like, you know, a foot and a half, 2 feet away from the ball. I mean, they don't have their eyes anywhere near.
Yeah, don't have a chance.
Over the top of the ball. They don't have a chance of really aiming it from there. And, I mean, just in the past week, I bet 60% of my putter fittings have been with guys that are 6'3" and taller, up to 6'7". And those guys in that range, depending upon their arm length, it's really difficult to find a putter that fits them.
Yeah, I imagine.
You know, they make 34- and 35-inch putters, but a lot of these guys need a 37-inch putter, and it's hard to find one. You know, and if you find one, it's not balanced right because it's made for somebody that's, you know, 6 feet tall, 5'11". So I think that's a place to start for people. The other place I would suggest is most people love looking at a blade, but they're not very forgiving. A lot of them are toe hang. So if they're missing right, it's going to go right when you swing it forward. It's not forgiving. They're maybe cutting across the ball, hitting it off the toe. They got everything is going right on them, and they don't understand why. Where you get a mallet, it's a lot more forgiving, not only directionally, but distance-wise. You're going to hit it in the center of the face more often. it's going to go the appropriate distance for you more often. Just easier. I mean, if you look at the Pro Tour, you see less guys playing blade putters now. More guys are open to playing mallets and are playing mallets. Guys that you never thought would ever play a mallet are playing a mallet. Why wouldn't we, you know?
Yeah, that was like, I feel like Rory kind of started the trend when he came out. And he was like, I don't know why, if Scotty just switched to a mallet, he'd probably beat all of us. And then he went on his tear and he's like, man, Rory, you probably should have, should have shut your mouth there. Cause now, now Scotty's playing the mallet and all he's got to do is putt okay with how good he strikes and he wins a bunch of golf tournaments. Right. So, well, let's get the cat out of the bag. The next thing that is talked about the most on tour and has been, a big topic of conversation is aim point. Something that, myself, I've taken very seriously, and I will going into this year start using aim point because historically I've been a bad green reader. I just have. I'm not really great at reading greens. And so when I came and took your class, you kind of gave a nice overview of like where aim point started and why. If you wouldn't mind kind of sharing that, story of like how aim point came to be, I think that would be a great starting point. And then we'll kind of talk about what aim point is, what it isn't. And, ever since like Min Woo came out and aim pointed his, whatever it was, 6-inch putt to win this tournament this last weekend, everybody started to talk about it again. So it's a very, very timely for the conversation.
It is. Yeah. Aim point came about in the mid-2000s, I believe. Mark Sweeney from Orlando was just an avid golfer, just trying to get his game better, realized he wasn't that great of a putter, and his coach could only take him so far, so he just started experimenting on his own. He realized he wasn't reading greens very well. He got on the internet, did some research, couldn't find much information on the internet that really was helpful for reading green. So he just started rolling balls on a green, and he would roll a ball, make note of what was happening, different angles, different speeds, different lengths. And he started noticing, I would say it was even beyond a trend. He started noticing that if he understood a little bit better, the angles of the putt and so on, he could actually start predicting what it was going to do. And he started putting it in a spreadsheet. He's a computer software guy. So he started putting it in a spreadsheet. And once he had a spreadsheet developed, he started using it and started making a lot more putts. Well, he didn't really know what to do with it other than it was helping him because he understood how putts were going to break. And he decided he was going to go to the Golf Channel. So he went to the Golf Channel and he said, hey, I've got something that I think would work great on TV. It's going to show how the putt will break for the viewer, because everybody on TV, you're looking at it and it just looks like it's a flat, planar, tilted surface. You can't see any undulation really. So it's really difficult for the viewer to understand what this player is trying to do or what the putt is going to do. So he's the one that put the curve line on the Golf Channel. And he won an Emmy for that. Wasn't easy to get that on the Golf Channel, but it took him a number of attempts to finally get it out there, and it was very successful. It's not his product that's out there anymore, but he was out on tour basically for a number of events doing that, and all he had to do was really adjust for wind. If the wind came up, he would adjust it a little bit, but he knew exactly how every putt was going to break on the telecast, and you could see the announcers getting excited when the putt was traveling on the line, because they knew it was going to go in or lip out or be a really good putt. So from there, Mark thought, you know what? It's got to be a way to help people get better. So he came up with what was called an aim chart. And this chart was the first process that we used to help people read greens. It was still called aim point. But it was basically you had to understand how far you had from the ball to the hole, how steep the slope was, what angle to the slope you had, what the green speed was. Once you understood that information, you could just look at this chart. If you were within 20 feet of the hole, and it would say this putt's going to break 7 inches.
Yeah, just math, right?
It was just math and physics. Yeah. You know, and that was really the aha moment, as Mark goes, this is just math and physics, That product, I would say it worked well But it only worked well for people that could do a little math in their head, because you didn't always have a 5-foot putt or a 10-foot putt. You might have a 7-foot putt. You know, might not have 30 degree angle to the slope. You might have 15, but you couldn't put that all on a chart. So you just do a little math in your head and figure it out. It was a little time consuming because you had to walk around in an arc to find a straight uphill putt or a straight downhill putt to determine what your angle was and so on. And some people did really well. Stacy Lewis won a couple majors with it. Scott McCarron went from being a horrible putter for a tour player, like 120th on tour in putting stats, to top five year after year. So he improved a lot using Aimpoint. Still uses the chart, to my knowledge, and has not given it up. So it's all we had. We taught with it. People would use it. People would learn from it. They'd get better. They'd understand it better. But a lot of people would kind of drift away from using the chart. So the adoption rate wasn't nearly as high as what we wanted, but that's all we knew, right?
Yeah.
So by happenstance, Mark was doing a clinic with some, you know, eight to 10-year-old kids. And,
I love this part of the story, by the way.
You know, before he got there, the instructor that he was working with said, "Hey, Mark, I mean, these kids aren't going to be able to understand this chart, by the way." And Mark's on the plane, you know, going to the clinic, and he's going, "What the hell am I going to do then? This is what it is." So he just kind of came up with, you know, stand in between the hole and the ball, and just feel the slope between your feet. If you feel it going this way, just put your thumb up, put this on the center of the hole, or this way, and feel and aim it at this side of your thumb, and vice versa. So the kids just got it like immediately and started making putts and having fun with it and understanding how to green read. Well, I mean, young kids, they can't tell if it's breaking left to right or right to left. If you got a putt that's breaking 2 feet, they just hit it at the hole.
Yeah.
You know, they don't understand. And Mark just thought, wow, this is cool. So Mark and another instructor just kind of had some beers, and they started comparing it to, you know, just using the thumb to using the aim chart. And they go, wow, this is actually pretty close. And they started tweaking it a little bit. And the following January, we went down for our annual conference to go for additional training and so on. And Mark surprised us all and said, "Hey guys, we're not going to use the chart anymore." And we all went, "What? We're going to call this Aimpoint Express." And he explained how he had found it, how he had vetted it out, how he had compared it to the chart, how easy it was to use, how quick it was to use. And we just started teaching it. And since then, I think I've taught, in the first couple of years, I maybe taught 3 or 4 people how to use the chart because they just wanted to learn the chart. Everybody else was using Aimpoint Express. And since then, I haven't taught the chart at all. I've still got maybe 3 people around the cities here that use the aim chart, but everybody else is using Aimpoint Express.
Yeah, and so call it the Express. Like if I try and regurgitate the information that I learned from your clinic, you know, the first thing you had us do as we tried to feel it out is you had your level and you walked around the green and kind of gave us, you know, the feeling of what a 1 was for 1 finger, 2 for 2 fingers, 3 and 4. And then you stand behind the ball, and like you said, in between the ball and the hole, and then you know, kind of walk from the ball to the hole, and you're feeling out the slope on your way there and finding what the highest, you know, percentage slope is. If it's a 1 or a 2, which is what most putts probably are. I think I've played, I don't know, 3 rounds since I took your clinic. And I think I've had a 3 maybe once.
Yeah, you'll get more, but yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, in 3 rounds,
a lot of ones and twos.
Yeah, a lot of ones and twos. And so really feeling out the ones and twos. Stand between the ball and the hole, you put one finger up, and you know, obviously there's some intricacies, we'll just, for all intents and purposes for the listeners, put one finger up, you know, over the ball to the hole, and depending if it's left or right, you know, you look at the left side of your finger, right side of your finger, and then same with a two. And generally speaking, you're going to be, you know, on or around the hole with, yeah, with ones and twos, right? That's effectively what it is. And then I think the misnomer about aim point in general is that it takes longer than traditional green reading. And at least what I've noticed, and what I would say I disagree, is like with aim point, you're only looking at it from one side of the ball, correct?
Yeah,
like
when you're really your not slope. You're not looking, but yes, you're walking in.
Yeah, you're reading from one side of the ball,
and you only work from the middle third of the putt, so you only walk to 2/3 of the way to the hole. Some of these people that, I mean, we see a few of the tour pros on TV that are getting way too close. We don't teach it that way, but who knows where they've learned it from or what they've picked up on. But
are they trying to figure out what it does at the hole, or why is the, call it the, I don't know if you would call it the first third or the last third, whichever one you're not reading, why don't you read that part of the putt? Because wouldn't people argue that the last, call it third of the putt, is where like all the break is, and that's where you would want to read it?
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And now that I understand it a little bit better, how gravity works is once the ball starts curving, it takes a lot to change that arc of what's happening. And as the ball slows down, it's going to curve more. So it's really a factor of time. And that last part of the putt, the ball is traveling slower, so it's going to break more.
Is that why, so, you know, for people that have watched like broadcasts, let's say you have a 20-foot putt and it breaks, I don't know, 3 feet. You know, the line might kind of curve towards the end, but the initial start line that goes straight out, that's the start line, and then everything curves after that because you're hitting it on your initial start line, which is that first third of the putt.
Right. And this is, I don't want to get into too much detail, but, you know, there's such a thing as a linear golfer and a non-linear player. And a linear golfer just kind of putts at a spot. You know, they pick something out on the green or in the background, and they just putt it at that and let it break off of that. But about 75% of us are nonlinear. We actually kind of almost see a curve on the green. We almost see a dotted line or a curve that's what we're going to putt at. And we can see that apex of the curve, and that's what we tend to putt at. The problem with that is before the ball hits that apex of the curve, it's already been breaking.
Sure.
Gravity has already started to take effect. And people that read that curve and see the curve, it can be a really strong influence. You know, I'm a nonlinear too. So, I mean, I saw that curve and I still see that curve. But if you just putt it at that apex of the putt, you're actually going to miss the putt every single time on the low side because it's been curving before it hits that apex. So if you aim at the apex, it's already curved and it's going to break underneath that.
Which is why they call it missing amateur side, right? Amateur, like most amateurs miss low.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what happens, you know, it's kind of the same as the putter fitting where, you know, if you aim left, you're going to push your putt to the right. Well, what happens with people that putt to an apex, they underread every putt basically. And what they do is they hit it outside of that curve. They don't know they're necessarily doing that. They think they're putting it at that apex of the curve and they're hitting it outside of that. And then they'll see it roll over that apex of the curve and they think they hit their line exactly where they wanted to and putted it exactly where they were trying to hit it. But they actually didn't. So, again, you can putt that way and you can be effective that way. It's not going to be as effective as getting the spot and hitting it exactly at that spot because that's going to be way more accurate. You know, when you're seeing a curve and then you're putting it outside the apex, how far do you hit it outside the apex? How far do you pull it? I mean, it's just an innate instinctual thing that we do. And it's really hard to be really good at that. Some players are better than others. And some people, it's a good way to go. You know, if somebody's a good green reader and they can read greens that way and they can hit their line and they can make putts, go for it. You know, I think that's fine. I don't think everybody's going to do well with Aimpoint, but I think probably 90% of people would do better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a skill and an art form like anything else. And some things are going to work for others and some things won't for others, which is why I was really, I can't remember who it was. You'll remember his name that said that you should, that PGA should ban Aimpoint, which was an interesting take.
Yeah. Yeah. That was Lucas Glover. That was, I don't know, a couple months ago. He had some weird takes. I mean, I think he believed him. I think he's a nice guy and all that. Nothing against Lucas, but he said it was slow, number one. Then he said people are putting too many footprints around the hole, number two. And then number three, he said nobody's gotten better from using Aimpoint.
Yeah, that was the most ridiculous one.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty – Yeah. That's just – proven at this point. Like, you can't just say nobody's gotten better using Aimpoint. Like, that's not true.
Mark actually went through and did some stats of before and after. He picked out 15 players that he knew the dates of when they started, and he took their stats from before and after. Every single player had improved their putting stats.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a falsehood. You know, I think as you've seen, it's not slower than reading greens a traditional way, because a good player is going to read the putt from behind. They're going to walk to the other side, from the other side of the hole, and look back the other way. And sometimes they'll go to the side and they'll triangulate. I mean, that's a lot of steps, first of all. And Aimpoint, you basically go to the first third of the putt, and the second third of the putt. You get your read and put your fingers up and you go. I think where it can get the perception that Aimpoint is slower is, when do you do Aimpoint?
Sure.
So if you wait till it's your turn to putt and then you go through it, well, everybody's looking at you and you're doing something a little different, it might look like it's slower because everybody's watching. But a lot of times you can read that putt, and you've done it three times now. You played three times. Maybe you've gotten used to, when do you read your putt? And if you read it before it's your turn, you've got the putt all red. You've put your fingers up. You go, well, that's going to break a foot right to left. By the time you get up to putt, you just go up and putt.
Yeah, whether it's right or wrong, I guess I'll have you tell me. But like the couple times I've done it so far, I'll try and get an initial read the first time so that I have an idea in my mind. And then I'll check that bias when it's my turn, kind of at that second third of the putt, and just confirm what I saw. Because I have noticed that if I do it right away and then let's say I'm the last to putt, I'll almost forget and I'll be like, oh, and for me, it's a, now it's a process thing, right? Or starting to become a process thing. And so the last thing I want to do is, you know, go read it. And then, you know, maybe someone's got to putt, someone else has to putt, you know, then it's my turn and I'm kind of outside of my process and I just immediately go to doing it. I want to at least go back, do it one more time. But to your point, like if you just take it at face value, say you have 20-foot putt, you know, and by your, call it estimation, you're walking two-thirds of that putt, so you're walking, call it, we'll just say...
four-thirds of the way.
Yeah,
two-thirds there, two-thirds back.
Yeah, so a total of maybe 25, 28 feet, somewhere in there, where if you do a, you know, go and look behind the roll, you're doing 20 feet there, another 10 feet past the hole, 10 feet there, and then 20 feet back, so now that's 60 feet.
Exactly.
So just by that, you know, logic, it shouldn't take longer by any means.
And then talk about footprints.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the same 60 amount.
60 feet of footprints versus 28 feet of footprints, and one of them is causing more problem.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense really either. So, you know, I just think realistically the folks at Aimpoint and Do It Right on tour, they understand it. It's faster. You're not making more footprints, and I'm getting better from this. So,
yeah,
you know, there was a little bit of pushback to Lucas on that one too. So
yeah, well, I just, in general, I think golf's one of those sports, like you can't really, I don't know if you can ban, call it strategies or, you know, the way that people want to do things. Like you would never ban quote unquote decade golf, right? Like when it comes to,
I thought there was something in colleges where they tried to ban that.
They tried to ban what?
Using decade.
But how can you ban like a strategy?
Well, I think maybe it was something within, you know, a chart or something that they could pull out and look at.
Mm, yeah, see, I could see like maybe, you know, like I think now you can't use the Strack-A-Line like green books and stuff like that. But the knowledge that's in your head how can you ban that? Like, even if you, you know, let's say you tried to ban aim point, can you ban somebody walking around reading their putt and standing in certain areas? Like, how do you even...
I don't know how you'd go about banning it, because, I mean...
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
You know,
to
after
me.
You do it for a while, I mean, and I don't propose that people do this, but, I mean, you could stand there and not put fingers up, and you'd... I mean, you get used to what a two looks like, so
yeah.
You pretty much know where you're aiming, and you'll find that out after you use it a few times. You get a five-foot putt, you're going to go, it's a two, and you're going to know, well, that's, you know, 2 inches outside the hole, you know, or whatever with your green speed. So even that, you could ban that, but you're still going to be able to do the other parts.
I think it just comes back to there just needs to be the PGA in general, probably golf in general, needs to get better at how long it takes to play a round of golf. And for whatever reason, when people get to the greens, that's when people think it takes the most time. And it's probably just because that's where the most coverage is naturally. But people aren't seeing all this stuff that pros do, you know, like when they get to their ball, like what their caddy's doing to get, you know, the numbers and the yardages and the wind and all that goes just into a single shot. Like when the TV coverage pans over to them, they're just about to hit their shot. But I mean, I think it takes way longer for somebody to hit like an approach or a wedge shot than it does a putt by the time it gets to their turn. And I have nothing to back that up other than just, you know, what I see and feel. I've been to some PGA Tour events and, you know, like it, that process is a lot longer than the green reading part. And if it just came down to, you know, every group's got to play in less than 4:30 or you get stroked or something, I think that's what they have to figure out. And then none of it's, you know, there is no argument between any of it.
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah.
You know, it's all too slow. They're too slow on the greens. They're too slow on the tee box. They're too slow on their approach shot, their wedges, their chipping. You know, it's all too slow. And it's not, seconds matter. You know, it's 10 seconds here, 10 seconds there, but you add that up over a 144-player field, it makes a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, baseball did a great job with that. I mean, I went to a baseball game last year, and holy cow, I got it for a hot dog, and like two innings had gone by before like two outs would have gone by.
Right.
You know, like they figured out a way to do it. I think the tour and just, I think golf in general, like I, even some of the, you know, rounds you'll play at certain tracks, I mean, it takes 4.5-5 hours.
Right.
And I mean, yeah, maybe it has to do a little bit with maybe like level of play, but even still, I play with bad golfers all the time who can play fast.
Right.
So, yeah, like, I don't know what it is, but something's got to change.
Well, it's got to change because there's a trickle-down effect. So when you get, you know, to watching TV and you see the players on tour and they're taking 5 hours to play and you're seeing what all the steps they're going through, what are you going to do? You're going to emulate that.
Yeah.
And the reality is they're much better players. They're you know, they're taking 69 strokes around and, you know, you've got other people taking 90.
Yeah.
So 90 times going slow versus 69 times going slow is a big difference. So, you know, the other thing is some people don't play golf because it takes too long.
Yeah.
You know, so we got to make the sport. Yeah, it is a barrier to entry for sure.
Yeah,
you want to stay married too. You know?
Yeah, half hour to drive to the course, 4.5 hours to play at probably most places, another half hour. I mean, that's 6 hours of your, I don't know, call it 16-hour day, 18-hour day, right? Like, it's not a small amount of time.
No,
I think that's why a lot of people join country clubs now, because like you get to a lot of clubs where it's golfers and people who know the sport. Like, you can legitimately play in 3.5 hours, 4 max.
Right.
And that's a big difference.
It's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. You compound that over 100 rounds, you know, 30 minutes. I'm not even going to try and do the math, but I can tell you it's a lot of time that your significant other will enjoy back with you.
Yeah.
We'll put it that way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, this was awesome. Thank you for one, talking about aim point, but putters, all of it in general, is a reminder. So people can, one, find you for putter fitting at Second Swing Minneapolis.
Yep.
And then do you have anywhere separate for your, like, putting instruction? And where do you do that?
Yeah, I do putting instruction, too. I've got a website, Andy Thompson Putting Coach. So easy to find, andythompsonputtingcoach.com. You can find me on the web. And we can go from there. I like to start with an evaluation when I work with people. So we just go from there and I help people as best I can in any direction that they need help with their putting.
And you do stuff outside, I imagine.
I do.
Somewhere. Do you go somewhere specific or wherever?
Primarily at Edinburgh.
Okay, sure.
Up in Brooklyn Park.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, great spot. And
yeah, it is.
They've got a really good putting green out
huge
there.
Huge putting green. Yeah. That's the largest green in the state.
Is it? Is it actually? Yes. I can picture it in my mind.
It's
I was thinking, man, that's a big
putting green. It's
all in once. Yeah. Yeah. I guess now when you put it that way, because it all technically three are one. Yeah, it probably is the biggest green in the state.
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you coming out, making the drive. Appreciate the conversation. I know I'm going to be seeing you this summer at least a couple times. Appreciate you helping me get fit into my putter. And hopefully, you know, after a season of Aimpoint, we get to have this conversation again and talk a little bit more the intricacies of the strategies and all of it. And I think, to your point, there's a lot of golfers out there that could probably put this into their game and learn from it and play a little bit better golf and hopefully play a little bit faster for all of us too.
For sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Appreciate Thanks, it. Andy.